Good morning. Thank you, Dion. Very much appreciate your service to and commitment to this body. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know you are my disciples, if you love one another. A while back, Kent, Joel, and I were talking with Dion, and Dion said that periodically he's contacted by a church that is interested in buying this building if we wanted to sell it. We don't want to sell. It's a fairly fast-growing church, and they're confident that if they had this building, their attendance would double. Naturally, Kent, Joel, and I wanted to know why their church would double in our building. And Dion said, well, they have a clear vision, and all their members support that vision. And that really triggered a lot of questions in my mind. What is our vision? What is our identity? Is the vision of a church different from its identity? Is our vision clear to all our members? Is our identity clear to all our members? Can the leadership of a church cast a vision that is different than its identity? You know, no one goes into a Burger King and orders a Big Mac. If you want a Big Mac, you have to go to McDonald's. They serve Big Macs. If I went to a McDonald's and they served only Whoppers, my legitimate expectations would be very confused. You know, what happened? What's going on here? Well, when our members come here, what do we serve? What have our members learned to legitimately expect when you are part of our family? What traits and values did we see when we chose to become members here? I think that if our collective expectations for this family were molded into one, that's probably our true identity. Our identity is equal to our collective expectations. I think a leadership can cast a vision, but that vision would struggle if it doesn't harmonize with our essential identity. And that's important. A vision that is out of step with our identity would be a little bit like walking into a Burger King and ordering a Big Mac. Vision and identity need to walk hand in hand. So this morning, I'm going to talk a little about our identity, and my brothers will share more about our 2020 vision, and that vision is very much intended to reflect, reinforce, and honor our identity. Kim and I first visited this church over 20 years ago. When we came, we were attracted by the diversity in this body and the members of this family. We very much like how we were greeted, embraced, and cared for. Almost immediately, Trina Briscoe volunteered to stay with our daughter, Rebecca, so Kim could visit the doctor. That was before we were expecting Eric. We witnessed a church committed to missions, including a close relationship with Guyana. We noticed a dedicated commitment to worship through singing. We noticed a building in reasonable shape, though far from perfect. Within our first couple visits, we were invited into a member's home where we met Jim Ely. We didn't meet his wife, Wanda, because she was on a mission trip in Guyana. This body clearly valued genuine relationships and encouraged connections between members that went beyond Sunday morning gatherings. You know, we were new to Columbus, and we had to move a number of times in apartments before building a home. Glenn Cunningham brought his truck and one of the youths to help us move. That's what you call real relationship. We found the preaching to be dynamic, the worship to be Bible-based and inspiring. The minister was close to our age, and he and his wife had children near the age of our daughter. You know, more than anything, Reynoldsburg felt like family. Like family in the sense that the welcome was warm and genuine, the commitment to each other was in earnest. No one put on airs or tried to conceal any family flaws. Yeah, we could see there were differences in some beliefs, and we were aware of prior disagreements. But we also noticed that if there were differences, the different groups seemed to cooperate, and neither really tried to dominate or force their views on the other. You know, that too reminded us of how family feels. The beliefs we shared in common were more important and our beliefs that diverged. And the basic bargain seemed to have two parts. No one gets to demand that others participate in things they believe violate the Bible. And secondly, no one gets to demand that others stop doing something they have a choice not to participate in it. That basic approach seemed like a core identity value, and it felt like family. Now, all families change over time. Healthy families change and develop in ways that reflect their values. A balanced family keeps a mix of old and new traditions that all serve to teach and preserve values that are constant. And that is the type of change that we saw succeed over the years here at Reynoldsburg. If it was a new expression of a long-standing value, yeah, it would usually be embraced. If not, it really wouldn't last. Shortly after we became members, our body stopped meeting at the building on Sunday evenings, and members were encouraged to meet in each other's homes in small groups. Kim and I talked and came to see this change as a new expression of a value we noticed when we first became members, meeting in homes and prioritizing genuine relationship. Later, our praise team was added to strengthen our singing during Sunday morning worship. Here too, Kim and I saw this change as a new expression of a value we noticed when we first became members. This body prioritized good singing when it worshiped. A few years after that, our body began inviting outsiders to be fed and to receive groceries and relationship in our community of care ministry. When I observed that, you know, this rarely resulted in new members on Sunday morning, yeah, I had questions about this ministry. But I came to realize that Jesus said, love one another. He didn't say love one another if. He didn't say love one another so long as. And one of the things that drew us to this church was its commitment to following the Bible. And that includes when Jesus said, when his followers fed the least of these. Community of care for us became a new expression of the value of following Jesus that we first noticed when we became members. You know, we observed a similar pattern when this body started sharing a building space with the Spanish-speaking church. As Kim and I considered this, we came to see it as another way of demonstrating this body's commitment to diversity, helping churches in different cultures like Guyana, and treating strangers like family, all of which appealed to us when we first became members. Of course, it helped that we were never expected to participate in their forms of worship, and that there was and is no intention to blend or merge beliefs or practices. Again, that seems to be one of this body's long-standing values. If what attracted us to this body was its genuine desire to treat us like family when we were strangers to it, then how could we refuse to treat others as family who are strangers to us? And in all of these new expressions of the truths we hold constant, we've learned something as a family. The best path to secure what we value for ourselves is our willingness to share it with others. We value biblical preaching, we share it with Guyana. We value being like Christ, we embrace the poor like he did. We value family and meeting in this building, we share this building with another part of God's family. By extending to others what God has given us, we preserve it for ourselves. And that seems to be another one of this family's core identity values. You know, I've witnessed tremendous good being done here by our Reynoldsburg Church family. And you have been wonderful to me and Kim. This family nurtured us as a young couple. It is the community in which we raised our children. You formed the intergenerational connections that fostered their faith and kept them tethered when the winds of culture and the rains of youth blew across their vulnerable horizons. This body helped forge the character of our children. Today, they are both in their 20s, live hundreds of miles away, they attend church weekly, and still call Reynoldsburg Church their church home and family. Kim and I can never thank you enough for that. This church family has been the source of some of our closest friends and most meaningful relationships through the years, and we are deeply grateful for that. We have grown spiritually under the dedicated, inspiring, and honest preaching of our minister Dion, and we are deeply grateful for that as well. Reynoldsburg has been a tremendous source of strength, and purpose for Kim and me. Now, I've been focusing on all the positive memories of our time as part of this family, which is fitting and appropriate for a Sunday morning address. And yet, it would be misleading to suggest over the years that I haven't experienced anything negative. That wouldn't be realistic for any family. There have been times when I didn't fully understand a decision by our leadership. There have been times that I've shared concerns with our leadership. And I've learned that sometimes I just need to let go of whatever issue or matter that I'm holding on to and to simply trust my brothers and sisters in this family. I have experienced real personal growth when I have let go of things that I couldn't understand or appreciate. I've observed and experienced that this family, like any family, organization, community, or nation, functions best when there is a large reservoir of trust and goodwill. This body and its leadership values relationship, rewards reconciliation, strives for unity, and when it has needed help, it gets help. Now, the leadership of this family cannot force its members, whose relationship is in breach, to be reconciled. But make no mistake, the health of this body can never be better, nor truly rise much higher than the members whose relationship is in breach. This is true for our personal families. This is true for our church family. And this too, this body's commitment to reconciliation and unity, this too feels like family. So who are we and where are we going? What are our collective expectations as a body? How are we different from other churches? What is our identity? Our identity is that we are a family and that we treat each other like family, even when the costs are great. At this church, we treat others the way we would like to be treated. We love others as Jesus loved. Collectively and individually, the members of this family seek to be disciples of Jesus Christ. In a few moments, my brothers are going to talk about some new things that we would like to do in 2020 to strengthen and reinforce this family. I'm going to close talking about some things that we are already doing and that we want this body to continue doing in 2020. We want to continue doing them because we are family. We want to continue doing them because they are part of our identity, and we want to continue doing them because in this family, we honor our spiritual fathers and mothers. We want to continue placing a high value in meeting every Sunday morning. We meet faithfully because when we are all together in one place, it's a place of safety, a source of security, of comfort and relief. You know, this is where we're known. We're all known, warts and all, and we still belong. We will continue to meet faithfully because that's what we've seen Ruth Ann Cunningham, Ruth Shingledecker, Mike Irish, Conrad and Brenda do, and what we saw in Evelyn Darr. We will continue to treat each other like family because that is where we grow up, where we are rewarded for doing well, where we are rebuked for doing wrong. We will continue to treat each other like family because that's what we see Bob and Nancy Swackhammer and Charles and Barbara Rudolph doing, John and Janet. Family is where we learn responsibility and to care for one another. Family is where faith develops, where hope is nourished, and where love takes root. We're going to continue investing in genuine relationships and do so in the context of small groups because that's what we've seen Nick and Trina Briscoe doing. When there's a job to do, family rolls up its sleeves and gets it done, often without having to be asked. When it's time for family to gather, all have a place at the table, no questions asked, no credentials need be shown, no proof of prior service is required, and family, all are welcome. Each belongs. As a family, we're going to continue doing whatever job needs done to advance God's kingdom because that's what we've seen Gene and Barb Scheibner doing, Greg and Darlene Gaines. Family can be a place of emotion, where feelings get hurt, where we taste the bitterness of pain, of rejection, or even frustration. You know, it hurts because we're connected. If we didn't care, it wouldn't hurt. And yet, family is where we learn forgiveness, how to give it, how to receive it. Family is where we experience reconciliation, where trust is rebuilt, where we are given the benefit of the doubt. As a family, we are going to continue focusing on reconciliation and holding each other to our best, because that is what we saw Carl and Sharon Ward doing. Family is where we learn to say, I'm sorry, when we've done something wrong, where we learn to tell the truth, where we learn to admit we were wrong. Family is where we discover grace for each other, for ourselves. Family is a place where we heal. As a family, we're going to continue to show each other grace and be a source of healing, because that is what we've seen Bill and Lynn Schindel and John Hess and Wanda Ely do. In this family, we honor our fathers and mothers, and we follow examples set by Bob and Anita, Jim and Gloria, Carol Daniels, Larry and Vicky. All of our members have a special place in our hearts as we are family. God calls us to be family. God calls us to know each other, to love each other, to care about and for one another. God calls us to be present in each other's lives, to work together, to celebrate with each other, to hold each other accountable, and to be fair with each other when we disagree. God calls us to be reconciled with each other, to honor our fathers and mothers, and to jointly raise up our sons and daughters. God calls us to forgive each other, to trust each other, and to submit humbly to one another. Not because it is easy, not because it avoids pain or is the path of least resistance. He calls us to be family because he is family. And by enduring the cross, he has placed true family within our reach. Being family causes us to be more like him. Our identity is in the family of God and as disciples of Jesus Christ. We ask that you join us in continuing the example of family so nobly set before us. Thank you.
Morning, church. Real quick check here, in the back. Josh, can you hear me okay? How about Wanda? Can you hear me okay? Give me a thumbs up. Yep. Jim Hardy, where are you? Radio check. 5x5. Did you hear that? That means loud and clear. So that's awesome. Thank you very much. Speaking of fives, let's do something a little different here. I want you to look around to someone close to you. Look at them and give them a high five. If you don't do high fives, do fist bump, elbow bump, head bump, something like that. Awesome. All right, why did I do that? Because it's, for some reason, I instantly saw smiles and everything like that when we were doing it. It just, I don't know, it's kind of fun to do. It's interesting to me that as I talk about, oh good, it's already up there. I was thinking about, you know, I've heard this expression before, that a person without a purpose is like a ship without a rudder. Of course I would use a ship reference. I'm not sure who actually quoted that, but that's a very powerful visual for me, that a person without a purpose is like a ship without a rudder. In fact, I can recall conducting drills on a ship and taking away the rudder. And we would have to steer the ship just using the starboard and port engine. Starboard engine ahead full, port engine back two-thirds. Very clumsy, very, very clink, and it wasn't very effective. And as soon as we'd get that rudder back, it just was an overwhelming sense of relief. And so the analogy of that is how important the impact of the rudder is just like with every person. You show me a person who knows their purpose, and I'm going to show you a person who's productive and effective in their lives. And I think that's, when we think about that from a perspective, and it really you can't dispute, humans, since Adam and Eve, have always been aspiring to know. The question in their minds is, what is the purpose of my life? Why am I here? And as Christians, as disciples of Christ, we know that our purpose and mission is quite simple. Jesus referred to it as the Great Commission. And I've always liked the wordplay in there where you can have mission as a part of commission. He simply said, go and make disciples. And I love the choice of words. Go and make. Two action, present tense verbs. Go and make. He didn't say stay and think. He said go and make. I kind of, the visual there for me is just, it's imposing. When Richard and I yesterday at the men's group, we were talking about how easy it is here in our lives to become kind of complacent and almost lose that sense of urgency like we see in a lot of countries. Israel, we were actually talking about that, where there's just this buzz about in a sense of, hey, today is a day. I've got to make something happen today. I've got to fulfill my purpose. What am I doing to serve a risen Savior and to share the gospel, share the good news with other people? And it is good news. We were just talking about it yesterday in the men's Bible study that, you know, almost the entire gospel is there's a lot of great stuff in that, with the exception of not being able to fix it yourself. Other than everything else, it's a great message. People need to hear that from us. And that's what we think in terms of mission. We're not going to complicate that. Go and make disciples. We also think in terms of here in Reynoldsburg, if you want to think about the mission as the long-term objective, what's our daily goal? And we're really in pursuit of changing lives. Changed lives is really important. If you think of that in terms of whether or not you've been a Christian all your life, we all know that we have to continue to spiritually grow and mature. We want that for each and every one of you. We want you to feel like you can, each and every day, you're growing closer together. Changed lives could be for someone who's not a Christian, never even heard of Jesus, coming to us for the first time. In many cases, getting them to that platinum question of, hey, have you received Jesus in your heart? They may not be quite ready for that. Maybe a changed life in that case is just hearing about how their week went. Do we have a listening, sympathetic ear? Are we engaging with people? And that's one of the things we want to try to promote, is think in terms of changed lives, both our own life as well as how can we have an impact on other people. So when you think in terms of our vision, we've been talking about this a lot, but I think now it kind of, hopefully it connects a little bit. We think in terms of here in this building, here is this church, this body of believers. We want to be viewed as a connection, connecting people to purpose, connecting people to God, allowing God to activate us here as a church to be in that role. We want each of you to feel like you have an effective rudder and purpose, and you know without a doubt why you are here. So the next couple slides I'm going to show you are just going to reveal some of the things we've been thinking about as far as reflecting on some goals that we have for this next year. Maybe. There we go. Okay. Now, for starters, with my military background, I'm not overly enthusiastic about the word retreat, but within the context of a church family and building relationships and love with other family of believers, I am all in. So that's a little bit of a play on words there, just sharing that. Dion has shared this vision towards a retreat of getting us together outside of this building, somewhere else, for an overnighter. And I love the sound of that. We all do. We think it would be fantastic, and we want to try to create that here this year in the fall. So we're already started efforts towards planning for that. As more details come, we wanted you to be thinking about that and getting excited about it as well. Oops. Oh. There we go. The next one is improving the guest experience and trying to be more intentional with as guests come in. I got to meet Jake and Roy this morning right there in the front seats. There was a bond right there almost immediately. They both had great smiles. They first time here, and sorry to call you guys out. You didn't even think you were going to be part of the presentation today, but you guys both had great smiles, and you just felt like two human beings that I wanted to connect with, because you just seemed to have some really good energy there. I want to make sure that we're doing that on a regular basis with our guests. I know Melissa has been very passionate about that as well, and we want to be trying to connect with guests as they come in and trying to get them more engaged immediately right out of the gates with other other family members. We want guests to feel compelled to sit there and say, hey, that was interesting. I want to learn more. I want to come back. I want to try to meet more people. If you feel you're being called to this ministry area as well, especially make sure you see Melissa or myself. We have some ideas about how to actually create a guest Welcome Center and also trying to mobilize the family around doing more effective job of getting people engaged with the family. It's all about connections. Next. We look at our building as God's asset or resource. Perhaps, you know, besides the people, the brothers and sisters here in this body, you know, besides the people, one of the most important assets that God can use here in this community. So it's whether it's through the community care dinners, Sunday morning services like we're here now, the men's and women's Bible studies that occur throughout the week, the summer Wednesday night barbecues that we have. We want this building to be that connection point for our community and for others that are around us. While we've invested a lot in our building this past year, there are continued needs. We want to do some upgrades of our audiovisual resources here to provide a better experience during the worship service. We are in desperate need of still some parking lot repairs, which we're planning here for the spring. And so we'll be excited to get that done as well. We have some other things just building-wise to become more code compliant that we'll be pursuing. And we're also in the process of studying what's the aspects of a new digital sign out in front of the building. One of the things we're excited about is, I'm picturing this sign that could be more effectively communicating who we are, where we are, and more importantly, you're invited, and trying to create that kind of feeling for others around us. So we are going into that and studying different aspects of that. I really want to thank the building and grounds team and the finance team together. There has been a lot of heavy lifting here in the past couple years in order to get a lot of the improvements done, and we still have more to do, but I really want to thank them personally and collectively as a team for all of their efforts and heart and leadership. That's enough for me. Let's hear it from Joel.
Thanks, Kent. Good morning, everybody. So if you have a presentation by a couple trained engineers, of course you got to have some charts and graphs and whatnot, right? So you know, in the late fall, we completed a survey to evaluate how we are positioned with attracting and retaining younger people. It was prepared by the Fuller Youth Institute, who works with churches all over the country in this regard. And from their extensive research, there are 6 key principles that a church must follow to be strong in attracting and retaining young people. So it might be it's a little blurry. Apologize for that. We have copies of this, of the full report, for anybody who wants it. But briefly, the 6 key points, core commitments as they're known, leadership. So young people need to be empowered to be leaders from a young age. Empathy. You know, we, the older generations, need to, you know, understand and appreciate what it's like to be a young person today, what they're going through, and so we can better help them and empower them. Taking Jesus' message seriously. So churches that are connecting with young people, well, guess what? They take Jesus' message of living as disciples seriously. Warm relationships. You know, a quote from the book that goes along with this is, "Warm is the new cool." Warm relationships between each other in the church, which are real and not forced, really trump so many other things in terms of connections. Prioritizing young people everywhere, making them a priority with our expenditures and our time and our people resources is important. And finally, being the best neighbors. So demonstrating that we care about people across the street, outside the walls, in our neighborhood, and around the world is critical to what young people find important. So these are the kind of the summary results of over 40 people who took this survey in our congregation. We thank you very much. And so by the answers, you know, to by the analysis of these answers, we can kind of see where the body feels like we're doing well. And so The overview is, in the area of Jesus' message, taking it seriously and having warm relationships with each other and being good neighbors locally and globally, the congregation feels like we're doing pretty well. In terms of empowering young people to be leaders and to understanding them better and prioritizing them in our time and our efforts and our budget. Those are areas for improvement. So in a nutshell, the most successful and vibrant churches in working with young people are addressing and making improvements in all six of these categories. Okay, this is kind of interesting. There's a 30-page report. This is the last thing I wanted to share from it with you. But what we have here is how we did against the leadership, empathy, message, Jesus message, warm relationships, prioritizing, and being good neighbors as a function of how you identified yourself in when you took the survey. So when you took the survey, you identified yourself as either a pastor or church leadership or regularly involved or regularly attending, occasionally attending, or other. And the thing that's pretty interesting is the analysis is very, very consistent regardless of how you identified yourself in the body. So it's fairly consistent. It was also consistent whether, you identified as a male or a female. A little bit of scatter on, the age of person. But in a nutshell, it's pretty consistent and gives us insight into areas where we're doing relatively well and for areas for improvement. And again, if you'd like to see the entire report, we have copies of it. So from this, the leadership notes that we need to be more intentional and put more focus in the areas important to young people. And by the way, young people, nominally, age 30 and under. So in response to this, we're doing several things. We've asked Dion to look at his schedule and see how he can be kind of a quarterback for the young adults group that we have here, and be involved with them and help that gel into a really strong group. We'll also be reaching out to some of the younger adults who have left the church and invite them to be part of what's going on. In spending time with some of our youngest adults, the recently graduated, they indicated they would like to have a group and a Bible study that's kind of, for them, for what they're going through, what they're experiencing. And so there's a plan to implement that in May when they are here. So the youngest young adults who are still here, the youngest who are out at college and whatnot, and will be back. So there's a plan to implement that in May. So regarding the youth group, up through high school, seventh grade through end of high school, we've nominally called the youth group here. And of course, we don't have a youth minister per se right now. So it's being kind of led by a variety of the parents here. And, some things are going okay. There's room for improvement. And so there is an intention to find someone to come and work with the group at least on a part-time basis. Last summer we had Paul and Ellie McLarty that were with us, and it was a real shot in the arm for the youth group and for the whole church. But I guess the key point is we as the leadership, we are committed to making this a church that younger people find as a family also. And, the turning point for success in this area is the commitment. Pathway of discipleship. What's that mean? So, like Kent mentioned, the mission of the church is to live as disciples, as true followers of Christ, and to bring as many people along with us as we can. So, with the pathway of discipleship, we're not inventing discipleship, of course. Jesus did that already. But rather, we need to summarize what it means to be a disciple of Christ at our church and position the ministries and other efforts of the church accordingly, and then continue helping each other advance in our walk while inviting other people to be part of Jesus' kingdom as well. So what's the method we advance along this pathway? The vision, at a high level, the vision is the method. We advance as disciples of Christ by connecting with God and connecting with people inside these walls and outside and connecting with the purpose that God has given us. That is the pathway of discipleship. And of course, there will be, you know, maybe some more details to that. But in a very simple way, we become focused on using our connections to our Lord and to each other and to the purpose of living that great commission so that we grow to be the disciples of Jesus that he's calling us to be. Churches that have a plan in this regard, a pathway of discipleship, and follow it for helping all their people advance continually to be more like Christ, well, they're the ones that are growing. Why is that? Because they're fulfilling the calling that Jesus gave his church from the very beginning. So this is in process of being developed and peer-reviewed, and so we'll be sharing it with you later this year. So to wrap up, so that's the vision that we have to share with you. Connecting with God, connecting with people, connecting with a purpose. Connecting with each other through a church retreat and connecting with the guests and new people that God sends our way. Connecting with young people in a focused way. Connecting with Jesus and each other and the whole world by advancing towards being the type of disciples that he is calling us to be. So tonight at 6 p.m., like Dion mentioned, there's a family meeting that we'll be glad to answer questions this morning, but talk more about it in detail, any questions you might have. Also discuss a little bit about how the 2020 expenditures are going to align with this vision. So it's been an honor and privilege to speak to you this morning and to be part of this body. And we thank you for this opportunity. So, God's vision is for us to be a light in this dark world. Do you want to be part of it? If you have any prayer requests, please come forward so we can pray with you. If you would like to start your life of being a disciple of Jesus Christ and naming him as Lord and Savior, you can come forward and you can even be baptized and have all your sins washed away. So I'm going to turn it over to Dion, and then we'll have the invitation. And again, thank you very much.